Healing with Raymond and Billy.
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 Healing.
Right. We are at episode 3, which is this episode is all about the stomach meridian. We've moved out of metal and away from lung and large intestine, and now we're into the earth element. Oh, by the way, I guess this is the intro to the podcast, so you're listening to Healing with Raymond and Billy, which you probably figured it out because I say that a lot. Well, we both say it in our intro. I don't know, I just had this dream when we were making this podcast. I was like, our intro is just going to be us, like, echoey saying it over and over again. I think I really loved how just on the nose the title of the show was. I was like, I can't come up with anything other than just it's Raymond and Billy, two cute QTs talking QT health.
It's so cute.
So today we're talking about the stomach, and I was thinking a little bit back to that first episode so long ago.
Yeah.
When you we were talking about the hero's journey, and we did the little like how energy moves through the body through the meridians. Yeah. Would you go back and explain again where stomach sort of fits into the puzzle of that? You don't have to tell the full story, but just touch on stomach again.
Yeah, so basically in the whole wheel of the hero's journey, which if you look up the monomyth, you'll see like a nice breakdown of it. It's a wheel. And the wheel goes round and round. And as you move along the wheel, you encounter various aspects to that journey. And so with the first part of the journey, you're kind of in like the normal world where you kind of just, it's like the day-to-day kind of superficial life that we all have, where we wake up, we eat our breakfast, we go to work, we go to sleep, you know, we have sex, we may not, we are, you know, experiencing different events in life. It's just the normal kind of life. And then at a certain point, you get inspiration to start the journey. And that's where the lung comes in and the large intestines, that metal energy of what new adventure am I being called to, and what do I need to let go of here in this waking reality to follow that inspiration? And that's very metal. And then after metal, you move into this earth aspect, which is about what transformations I'm about to go through and how I process those transformations and am able to use those along my journey. So this kind of idea of assimilation and transformation, and that's where the stomach and the spleen come in, is that they're all about taking those nutrients, breaking them down, making them easily assimilated for your body to be able to turn into gifts or energy, things that you need for your journey.
Right.
So that's that kind of that setup for where we are currently in our healer's journey along that pathway.
Yes. So last week we talked sort of about the end of the digestive process with the large intestine and the letting go, but the stomach is about that first. It's about like our appetite and our taking in of food chi and digesting foods and liquids, the extraction and assimilation. And there's that, I know, like, isn't it, energetically, I feel like stomach is also about moving energy in our body downward, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it, like the way we swallow and our food is moving down into the stomach, so it's about sort of how moving in that direction. There is also there's a relationship though with the lung too, because the stomach does some sort of, it does sorting of a lot of our nutrients as well, which I think is really cool. They're sort of like neural receptors in our stomach that sort of determine what we've eaten and what parts are carbs and what parts are protein and what parts are fats and sugars. And then it releases the correct sort of enzymes to kind of help extract the sort of nutrient out of that. And so the stomach has a little bit of like the pre-sifting and sorting relationship to small intestine in a way, right? Because it's kind of like helps make those, it kind of helps extract out the nutrients, which then sends down to the small intestine, which does another sort of more intense level of sifting and sorting, which that was a preview of a future episode about small intestine. So, but, you know, I think, like, we're just going to kind of keep talking about the relationship to all these sort of meridians and organs in the body, because they all interact with each other. And the stomach especially, I feel like... you know, has so many different effects on all the different meridians. And in fact, aren't there some, is there like a school of acupuncture or sort of a style of, or a famous acupuncturist that pretty much like all they treat is the stomach meridian? Do you know about this, Billy?
Yeah, there's, I mean, there's the earth schools where they say that the earth is kind of the center of the whole, of any kind of, like dis-ease within the body. Right. And so, you know, the stomach and the spleen become this kind of focus of their work, that if you have something that's maybe with a lung, then they'll focus on treating the spleen stomach meridians in order to impact the lung in that way. And so that's interesting, because there's different schools that teach different ways of doing it. And, they're like hardcore with like the herbs. There's like herbs that are specific to those school, that train of thought, and that were developed from those schools. I think it was from the Yellow Emperor's time, actually.
Yeah.
That really became super popular.
Yeah, I remember reading about my light Chinese medicine education I got in Shiatsu school, and I sort of always kind of I'll be interested, and I read different articles and stuff. And I mean, when I came across that concept, I remember it being sort of an interesting one to sort of really just sort of see. At first, it seems a little like oppressive to me as a treatment style to like only focus on one thing. But I also appreciate the sort of simplicity of it, and also the sort of idea of that you can kind of reach any part of the body through the single meridian, because there's certain points along the channel too that are that sort of, they have names or they have functions that connect them very specifically. So there's like the lung point on the stomach channel, or I guess I should say like the metal point, or that, you know, so there's all these different names that come up with that as well. The meridian, I should do my awkward, let's explain where the stomach meridian is. Although I'm a little bit more prepared this time, because I actually like looked at a photo before we started talking. I don't know why I never thought to do that the last two times we did this. I don't know. I mean, like, I just felt the need to show off my like fuzzy memory. I don't know. But so anyway, the stomach actually starts kind of right below the center of your eyeball. So that sort of stomach one, is that the bright eye point? Is that what that's called? Or is that bladder that's called bright eye?
I can't remember. I think that's...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, so the stomach kind of starts right... I think of it as like that sensitive part of like your eye socket, kind of like right in the middle. And then it goes down the center of your face. It comes into the corner of your mouth. And also, like, it runs down bilaterally. So it's obviously happening on both sides. It's not like the stomach channel is just on your left side. So you have a stomach channel on your left and your right side. So you're tracing down, come to the corner of the mouth, and then it kind of zooms out to the corner of your jawline. And then it comes up by your ear to the top of your head. I was really fascinating. When I was looking at this picture before talking, today, and I was like, oh man, I definitely have some stomach issue. When I work on a lot of imbalances with my stuff and related to things about like jaw pain or sinus pain or headaches and stuff like that. So when I was like looking at that channel and thinking about how sometimes I am prone to TMJ pain, and a lot of that is about stomach is a lot about there's a digestion of food, and digestion of life and people, which is a little bit like what Billy was talking about at the beginning. Like, we're digesting the things in our life, and how are we gonna assimilate and move forward. But if you are overdoing it, then one of the things that's also associated with the earth element and stomach is worry. And so it's like you're chewing on things and you're like chewing on that gristle, like you're, you know, worrying it to death. So that's definitely, so I was like, oh, that makes sense, that that TMJ pain that was kind of runs right up through that stomach channel. And then, you know, so it kind of comes up to the top of your kind of, I feel like where your hairline kind of dips in, so not the center of your head, but that sort of part near the top. And then it like shoots through your head, right, and comes out your neck. Is that kind of what happens? So it comes out, yeah, because it's like stomach nines at the top of your head and then like stomach whatever's on your neck. So it comes down, if you put like a finger 3 inches to the left and right of your windpipe, so not the center of your neck, you know, just kind of right down the middle, comes down to your collarbone, and then it does it kind of shoots out a little bit, so it's almost like running down the, if you have the run a center line down your chest and then run a line splitting each half in half, that feels a little bit like where it comes down on your rib cage. Does it kind of go right through the nipple or just mm-hmm. middle of that? Mm-hmm. And then you kind of cut a little bit closer down to the center of your belly, and almost kind of near the edge of your groin.
Mm-hmm.
And then does it kind of like go internal and come out again or a little bit, or is it just kind of scoot?
It just jumps down.
To like kind of almost right through your quad. So it like follows your femur essentially, mm-hmm. but the way that our bodies are shaped. Sometimes when I was in Shiatsu school, I always felt like people were working the stomach meridian like too much on top of the thigh. I feel like it's a little bit off center, kind of like where the meat of your bone is. Mm-hmm. It runs through your knee, and then my favorite point, stomach 36. The way I always, you can find it on yourself, is if you run your fingers to the outer edge below your kneecap, so it's like this, the top of your tibia bone, if you know where that is. But if you don't, you can just lift your toes up and down, and you'll feel this little muscle head kind of pulsate, and that, where that little bulging muscle is, it gives you a good point to kind of feel around where stomach 36 is, leg 3 mile, which is named as such because the idea is that if you're low on energy, you can tap, stimulate, and energize that point, and it'll give you the energy to run another 3 miles. I was all like, I don't know if I could run 3 miles the first time, but we'll see.
Right?
I could walk it. I could walk a long way. But anyway, so it kind of goes down that sort of front side of your shin, and then again, there's a point right sort of at the center top of your ankle. I use that point a lot too. I don't know why. You know how like you pick up a technique and you use it for like 5 million clients, and then all of a sudden you're like, I wonder where I got that tip from. I don't know, but I think it's stomach 41. Is that the one that's kind of like right in that divot at the top of your ankle, right?
Yeah.
But for me, I use that. I think I use that like sometimes I feel like in Shiatsu I'm working the meridian, it's a little bit like a battery. So, you know what I mean? Like there's a positive and negative. So I might, mm-hmm. I might find two spots and then, you know, put my hand on each one and kind of run energy between the two. But I feel like that stomach 41 is one if I'm working like some of the sinew meridian connections. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, I'm like talking to Billy. I'm like talking shop to Billy. I'm like, duh, duh, duh. Okay, so then it runs down the top of your foot and it ends at your second toe. So stomach channel. Woo. I don't know if looking at a photo helped Billy.
I think it really
made it different.
Exactly, it did.
Okay, so the stomach, as you can sort of tell, generally kind of runs down the front of your body, and it sort of is like, gives you, if you think about it, is like, it's what pulls you forward through life. So your bladder meridian is kind of behind you, giving you pushing energy, but your stomach, I feel like, comes from the front because it's about your own, you know, your own appetites, like what's sort of driving you forward, right, mm-hmm. in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like that.
The stomach time is 7 to 9 a.m., which sort of makes sense because that's like the first, you want your first meal of the day should happen. You know, you wake up in that time and that's when the digestive juices get going. Like you wake up in the, excuse me, the large intestine time is 5 to 7 a.m. So it's like you wake up, you have your bowel movement, and then you go make breakfast. So that's the sort of inner body clock that's sort of following.
That's great. I love how you looked up the body clock times.
Yeah. I think, because I think that's also how I think about it. You were talking about the sort of the way the that's what made me think about the hero's journey, is that I was also just thinking about the sort of the body clock.
Yeah.
So what are some of the common imbalances we can have in our stomach meridian?
Well, you know, I think the way that I kind of think about the stomach, you know, we talk about, you know, the physical organ itself, and then this kind of meridian or track line that we, you know, use to connect with the stomach in some kind of way. And I think a lot of people are like, okay, WTF, like how, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, what does that have to do with your eye? Yeah. What does it have to do with like my butt, my breakfast? Like what?
What does Raymond's TMJ have to do with this?
Yeah. Seriously, yeah. Like, okay. like where has this conversation gone? I think, you know, like we've talked about in other episodes, and hopefully you've listened to all of them because they're all super profound and good.
Who sponsored that part of the podcast?
But, you know, I think the idea is that we have, you know, connective tissue, among other things, nerves and different aspects like that that are through our body that communicate. Fascia is all over our body. It wraps through around our organs. And if you're able to communicate with one part of the body, it can light up other parts of your body, communicate with those parts, change the fascia, and also turn on the brain in different parts as well. And so that's really that connection between the body and the organs, and also the mind is accessible through, you know, these different acupuncture points. And so when we're talking about kind of how the meridian relates to the organs and different patterns, we're talking about kind of how the fascia and the surrounding organs and the body respond to different imbalances related to that organ, and also how it moves or is nourished or not nourished, or, you know, different things like that. So when we talk, for example, about, you know, having a nervous stomach, in Chinese medicine, a lot of times what we talk about is someone whose liver is overacting on the stomach, or your nervous system is so uptight, you have so much stress going on that your stomach gets really nervous, and that you can get some epigastric discomfort, you can get vomiting, you can get, you know, all of these kind of uneasy kind of symptoms, mostly in the epigastric region, or, you know, near the heart. So you might think of GERD, for example, or gastroesophageal reflux disease. But really, you know, the physiological idea behind it is that if you have fascial restrictions around the stomach isn't able to properly swing. And that's one of the things that I think is surprising to people, is that the stomach, like a lot of your organs, they need to move. They need to be like softened and supple and able to swing. And the stomach is one such organ that swings from side to side. So if you have any kind of fascial restrictions in your abdomen, possibly from, you know, like a surgery or an injury that happened, these kind of patterns can kind of start ricocheting through the body and then stop the natural movement, which then can affect these meridians and then cause these kinds of, you know, strange phenomenon that we might think are completely unrelated, but are absolutely related to these fascial restrictions, or what we might say blockages in the meridian. And so that is one of them, is like this kind of, you know, nervous stomach liver overacting on the spleen. But there's also other ones, like what we might call like throwing up or nausea. And in Chinese medicine, we call that rebellious qi.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's my favorite. What? I just love that phrase, and I was totally thinking about it while you were talking about it, as far as like rebellious stomach qi.
I thought you loved it like you loved having it.
No, I do not love having it. I definitely have it, but I love it as a term. And I think because I was thinking about, like earlier I talked about stomach directing energy down, and I think that's what I was thinking in my head, was that I was starting that idea that stomach's job is to direct energy down. So when we have things of energy coming up, so we're burping, or we're having the acid reflux, or we're having nausea and vomiting, things are going in the wrong direction. And so I just also like the idea of like, I don't know, it also feels less judgmental than like it's, you know, it's toxic qi. I'm like, it's just rebellious. Like, you can't hold that qi down.
The rebellion.
Right, totally. Because there is like, you do have to have that conversation, I think, with yourself all the time and with your body. And I think as someone who has frequently had a very fraught and antagonistic relationship to my body, because I think being a trans person, right, you are told for a very long time, starting at a very early age, that you do not know your body. And so that sort of like unintentional brainwashing, or intentional, whatever, it happens. Whether it's done out of love or malice, it's happening, right? And the effect of that is that as we get older, we have to work through those messages and learn to trust ourselves and trust what we know about our body. And so I think for one of the things that for me, because I had to navigate for so long, I've had to navigate my own, like advocate for myself when I was going into a doctor's office, and really sort of kind of go in with like shields up and like, here's the situation, be prepared for what they're going to say, you know, be prepared to educate them. Like, I kind of go in and, you know, I also know it makes me seem really like clear headed and smart, and he knows what he's doing, so I'll also get treated better. Like, making sure I perform in a way in the doctor's office so that I get like seen and understood and like, you know, quality and all that stuff, quality treatment. And so in a way that like, it did give me confidence, because it did help me have to like advocate for myself and learn about what my body is. But then now I feel like I'm at this stage where like, it's hard for me like to go to it. It's not, I go to the doctor and they serve a purpose, but I'm definitely one of those people that's like, I'm going to get like 8 more opinions because, you know, like there are a lot of doctors who know a lot of things more than me, but that doesn't, I don't think there's a lot of doctors that know more about my body than I know about my body. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So, you know, obviously they can like, I love special, like, I'm also more talking about just more the general doctor you kind of go to. That's probably always been my struggle, is to find a great primary kind of doctor. And I think probably most people have the struggle. I'm not that, you know, special in that sense, but there is that other layer when you're a trans person and a queer person and things like that. So anyway, going back to the stomach, there's also this idea of trusting your gut, right? And that even starts with those sort of that idea, and looking at it as sort of a barometer of things that could go off in your body, like Billy was talking about. And I do definitely like, probably the main, you know, the main questions I ask every client every time I see them, it's like, how's your digestion? How's your sleep? And how's your appetite? Because that makes a difference too, especially if someone is going, if they're grieving something or if they're stressed with something, I want to sort of know, like, are they remembering to eat? Are they eating enough protein? Are they feeling the sensation of hunger? Are they maybe eating a lot of stuff that's making them feel bad about themselves? Are they giving themselves some sort of message? I mean, the other messages that I do a lot of unpacking around appetite is that, you know, I was raised by sort of relatively conservative, like Southern Christian baby boomers, and they have that like white folks who have that strong Puritan base of like, you know, you don't eat too much, and like a lot of judgment about mm-hmm. fatness and eating too much. And yeah. but then also they come from they're one generation up from the farm and from poverty, excuse me. So I'm sure there's also that like scarcity, starvation thing mixed in with like yeah. judgment about eating too much. And so, you know, I didn't grow up feeling like my appetites and what I loved and what I wanted to do deserved to be centered or really listened to. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. they're just sort of maybe a preference on the side, but they're not mm-hmm. that important, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think I interrupted you. You were talking about rebellious stomach cheese, but let's maybe go back to what are some of the other different ways that it shows up in the body, like imbalances in the stomach. Or
I mean, I'm still thinking about what you just said.
Oh, sorry.
Which is so
you go you, so you profound. Take either baton and run with. I love that. I'm like, I'm gonna go deep into some of my work around trauma, and then now let's go back to rebellious stuff. Isn't that phrase great?
No, it's just, you know, I think what you said really kind of like hit me in a way too, because I feel like for me, you know, I didn't really ever know like how to feel. Mm-hmm. And so this idea of like having a gut, you know, having some sense of self to connect to be able to say, oh, I'm having yeah. a sensory experience inside of myself. What is that? I was not even aware of things happening within my body. And I think, you know, a large part for me has been about finding my gut,
yeah.
like becoming connected with, okay, let's close out what's happening in the outside world and let's go back in and let's feel what am I feeling? Because I think in a certain way, when you have to survive, mm-hmm. you feeling is a luxury. Yeah. You know, and it's not something that you really want to do because you have to do what you have to do to get through. And so why feel that?
Yeah.
And I think after a while, you know, that reconnecting of myself with my, you know, the emotions that are inside of myself, you know, it's like this vast, endless universe inside of myself. But like finding some sort of location to hold on to this idea of like, okay, if I can place some kind of feeling inside of myself in some location, then I can kind of build up an idea of the constellations of my emotions and kind of what they mean. And so I feel like the stomach, you know, even in our language, how much we place on our gut and our you know, our nervous stomach, or, you know, how something just doesn't sit right for us. And also how a lot of times our emotional states, when we get really upset, it can cause us to vomit.
Yeah.
Just that whole experience of the connectedness between that. It just, what you said really made me think about that, and like how that is so much an important part of, you know, kind of how we experience the world, because we experience the world through our mouth so much.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know, and so that idea of like that some things can just be really difficult to digest, you know.
Right. And they might take a really long time to digest too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they might get really rotten and they may taste really bad and, right. you know. There's like that whole aspect of that process of digestion. So it just kind of made me think a lot about, you know, those ideas of, you know, how our emotions and how they're related to our bodies and how our bodies naturally react, and how those can be like, you know, if we are having some kind of physical response, it's a good idea. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, because we're having these physical responses, that it is necessarily related to, you know, some sort of, you know, I think I hear a lot of people oversimplify that, you know, you have been repressing your anger for all these years, that's why you have cancer.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you've been doing this for so long, that's why you have that. And so that's not the message that either of us are saying.
No.
But I think what we're saying, I think what we're saying is that the idea that, you know, we can be able to use our relationship to our emotions and what's happening with our body as kind of indicators of what can be going on and how we can work with those those energies and those emotions to use it as a transformational mode of experience.
Right. And like about giving a sort of vocabulary to have communication with the body and sort of to find out what's going on and what we need in the moment. And I was thinking back about how you know, if we are in states of extreme stress, we're giving off a lot of those stress hormones as well. And what happens just from sort of a biomechanical point of view, that's also why like our appetite will frequently shut down. If we're constantly shooting off all those stress hormones, our bodies were designed to, like, if we need to protect ourselves, if we are in danger, then they're going to sort of shut down the non-essential organs and send energy and blood to other places. So for example, like your body's going to be like, drop digesting the pizza. We got to run away from this pizza, you know, whatever. Like, so that's some of what's happening too, is that if we're constantly inducing these types of stress responses that are sort of fight, flight, freeze, those same situations. That's part of why it's like it's hard for us to eat lunch after we've had like a fight with a loved one or our boss yelled at us or if we're worried about a project, all that stuff or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like exactly why when we talk about like the digestive process, we're also talking about this kind of like easing the amount of stress so that things can have a free flow.
Yeah.
And, you know, this idea of, we haven't talked about the liver yet specifically, but that the liver has an energetic function where when stress happens, the liver kind of like the roots of a tree kind of just grabs into the earth and tries to choke it for nutrients. That's kind of, you know, the earth is like the spleen stomach. And so when you feel that kind of wrenching feeling, that's that liver wood energy kind of going in there and causing those contractions and that kind of grabbing kind of feeling, that stagnation. So a lot of what we do with our work is we try to work to calm the nervous system. And like the various ways you do that, you can do that with, you know, getting body work, shiatsu, acupuncture. You can also address it through the mind as well, like with, you know, doing guided meditations, tinyurl.com/anxiety-meditation.
That's just a free meditation that we plugged in the first one. We're going to circle back to that. It's not going to take you to any site where you are on a subscription pill buying program or something like that.
That's a brilliant idea.
Oh, man. Oh, capitalism.
No, that was a free link to a UCLA guided meditation thing. But there's also like other apps, but you have to have a smartphone for. But you can download those links and you can play them anywhere you want. You can burn them to a CD if you're into that, or put them on a tape.
If you're into that vintage sound, you could burn them on a CD. Oh, man.
Put it on your 8-track.
I like that. Oh, I was just... while you were talking, I was just sipping on my icy beverage, which made me think about how cold drinks are actually not good for the stomach. But I was thinking about that today because it's something that I'm aware of. And this totally happened to me when I was a kid, when I was like I think I was doing yard work, or I was at soccer camp or something where I was young and being in the sun for too long and running and working too hard. And then I was really thirsty and I chugged like a ton of really cold water. And then I got this really intense stomach cramp. And so it was one of those things that I remember at the time, everyone was all like, I don't know, like, no one, I think it's one of those things that, like, I sometimes had some bodily experiences like that as a kid. I would, mm-hmm. and I would experience something like that. Whenever I talked about it, people would just kind of be like, shrug and act like I hadn't said anything. So I was kind of like, that's weird. Like, no one has any explanation for it, but, like, also we're just going to be like, huh, I don't know what that is. Like, bodies are weird. Like, I feel like I got that sort of, like, you know, it's kind of like, my arm hurts and I do that. Well, then don't do that. Like, I feel like that sort of approach was given to me a lot as a kid. And, you know, I get it. Kids say weird shit. Like, now as an adult, I get it. But also, it's funny when you have that sort of memory, and then years later, I remember being in shiatsu school and a lot of the teachers talking about, like, that in Chinese medicine, you drink room temperature water. It's not just Chinese medicine. Yeah. It's also, like, it's other cultural people, too. But, you know, room temperature water is much more popular in Europe, for example, than in the States. But the idea of that is that our bodies can absorb, you know, room temperature water at a faster rate, and that the icy water does sort of seize up our insides a little bit. Obviously, like, mm-hmm. right now, I'm sort of doing it intentionally. Like, I kind of wanted to have, I wanted to have a drink that I was drinking slowly. So now, like, I play with the principle. So it's not that I've given up icy beverages per se. It's just more that when I'm hydrating, or I always make sure I have, like, I usually am drinking, like, a room temperature glass of water, and then if I have some sort of drink with flavor, I might put it over ice or something like that. So I'm sort of mixing it. And the stomach in general likes to have, is like, if you eat too many cold things or raw things, it can be hard on your stomach as well, because your stomach basically has to heat up, both sort of metaphorically and physically speaking, to cook everything you're putting down in there. So if you give your stomach a nice, beautiful bowl of, like, cooked vegetable soup, man, you've already, like, started so much of the process to helping your body to break it down. So it can really get to the sifting and separating out and sending down through the spleen and whatnot. Whereas if you eat a big salad, that's going to have to hang out in your stomach for longer as it kind of breaks down and massages it down. The other thing that's good to be aware of, and I totally remember my dad, you know, being like, chew your food when I was, like, you know, as a teenager, like, inhaling or whatever, or, like, you should stop and, you know, whatever, da-da-da. And, of course, you don't listen because you're a surly teenager. And then, like, years later, you know, like, I was thinking about that. There is ways that you can kind of help if you are someone that's having kind of sluggish digestion. That is something that if you really make sure you're chewing a lot, because what that does is it starts to give signals to your body as well. Like, so not only are you physically breaking it down with your teeth into smaller pieces so your stomach doesn't have to work so hard, but you're giving more time for your brain to send all the neurochemicals down to your digestive system to get them ready. So if you only are just, like, chomp, chomp twice, like, your brain probably hasn't even, like, kicked anything down. Like, but if you actually chew things, like, what's the right, is there some magical number that you were taught in school of how many times you're supposed to chew your food? Like, some magic, I don't know.
I'm sure there was
50 to 100, 30 to 1,000. I don't know. Like, yeah. It's gonna be some, there's probably some reason about it, about, like, moving heaven and earth by the number 33 or something like that.
Totally. Totally. Yeah,
just do it, I don't know, more than 10 times.
I was saying, shoot for once.
I know, right? Start with 3 or 4, see how that goes. Just, I don't know.
That's kind of my speed. I really should chew more.
Yeah, I should chew. That's a good quote. I should chew more. I really should chew more. But yeah.
Oh, that's a wrap. You, like, kind of covered everything that I had written down to ever talk about. You said the salad. You said the soup.
The cold food. Warm stuff.
Yeah. Are we gonna do
yes,
Billy's Herbal Corner?
So, Billy, what herbs do you recommend for the stomach?
Yes. Okay, so, you know, when people talk a lot about having, like, nausea or lack of appetite, I'll recommend that they smell some patchouli.
Okay.
So I...
Say more. I mean... Does it have to, like, the essential oil or the plants?
Yeah, the essential oil. Yeah, like, you know, it's not my favorite smell.
You know, I live near Asheville, so there is some. Uh-huh. It can be intense sometimes.
Uh-huh.
So
that's... Oh yeah, oh yeah. And that's, I think, why I'm not like such a big fan of it. I think I've probably grown, you know, grew up with quite a bit of the patchouli hippie smell, and I just like, ooh. But when I realized it has some medicinal value, that's when I was like, oh damn, I could really, you know, use that. And so I think the value of it is like, if you are like, let's say you're really depressed and like, you're not able to kind of digest life, 'cause you know, shit's hard. Before you set a meal before yourself, that's easy to digest, like some soup or, you know, top ramen or whatever it is,
right? Whatever it is,
whatever it is, some rice, take out a little bit of patchouli and the patchouli oil and just take a little sniff. And then the idea is that your gastric juices start getting a little hungry, and then you get, you know, you get a little appetite, and then you can start eating. So that's that. And then also for people who have issues with kind of like acid regurgitation, like it feels like some of the acid comes up their throat, dandelion root tincture has been known to be helpful for that. You take it about 30 minutes, you know, take, you know, a few drops of it before 30 minutes before a meal, and then you eat that meal and you see how you do. And then you may need to increase the amount of the tincture or decrease it, or maybe instead have the tea, or look at something else. But that's one line of something that you can try for that.
Yeah, I've had good luck with a version of that. It was a tincture that my herbalist basically called like an herbal antacid sort of thing. Mm, but mm-hmm. It was essentially, I think it was dandelion and catnip and licorice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it was that the bitter herb thing that sort of, that's what you were talking about, that kind of gets our, it's a digestive, it gets our body to kind of start to kick things off. One of my random things I remember learning in school was if you don't have an appetite in the morning when you wake up, to eat 5 strawberries. Like that was the food prescription. Just 5 strawberries.
Interesting.
And there was a time when I had these dried strawberries that I'd gotten from the Seattle Farmers Market at Pike's Market. There's like the one place in the country I've ever had these amazing dried strawberries. But it was really helpful, and it actually kind of worked even with the dried fruit version. So stomach does have those sweet tendencies. So I think like for my acid reflux, when that is causing me to not have an appetite, that's when I definitely go for more the bitter herbs. But if I just sort of have like maybe a leaden stomach or a numb stomach, then sometimes I find like a little bit of that sweetness. And I don't know what it is about strawberries, but it does kind of help get the juices flowing, as they say.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a really great tip. I really like how you said like the leaden stomach versus the other kind of stomach and like the different acid direction you go with that. That's a really good differentiation.
Yeah. And my other thing that I do is for myself is I do abdominal massage with a little bit of lavender essential oil. Like sometimes if you know that you can roll with lavender oil, you can put a couple drops directly on, but I'll also like, you know, you're always supposed to do a carrier oil lotion and all that stuff too. So I've kind of been moving a little bit away from some direct, like essential oils. I kind of went a little wild with them, and then I started to realize that like they're really pretty potent, and they really are maybe doing stuff that I shouldn't be too like, you know, loosey-goosey with. I don't know where all these funny sayings are coming from. All that's really to say is that like I've only studied a little bit from essential oils, right? But I do love using them kind of like how you were suggesting, where like there's so many times I use them, I just open the bottle and sniff them. Like, you know what I mean? I don't need, so it's like, I think for a while I was like diffusing them and doing this or whatever, but that also can be problematic because a lot of people are scent sensitive, or they might, you know, they might just, like they maybe don't need lavender and that's bad for their system, but you've like blown out your treatment room with your, you know, essential oil diffuser, whatever. So I do think there's a lot of times people do the well-meaning, like trying to create a safe, trying to start the healing by permeating the air with things. But yeah, I've kind of been moving away from that a little bit because I feel like that's maybe not the most creating the most open environment for all the people I want to come to my space. So, but for, in your home, you can smell it up like patchouli all you want.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Stomach meridian. I don't know. I think anything else that we can probably pick it up next week when we also, I want to talk about earth a little bit more, just the earth element, but we'll talk about that a little bit next week when we talk about, or the next episode when we talk about spleen, which is the other half of the earth element. Does that sound good?
That sounds perfect.
Awesome. All right. Any other words of wisdom you want to add before we fade out?
Have a wonderful day.
Same to you and same to everyone listening. Seriously, y'all, thank you for listening. I know that you know, an hour long podcast is a lot, so I hope that you're getting a lot of content and enjoying this, and we'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or if you anything we say. I know sometimes we probably popcorn around and we might not fully go into a subject or explain things as thoroughly as you maybe want to, as you may be the information you need. So drop us a line is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I think we would love to do like a Q&A session at some point.
Episode. Yeah. That'd be really fun. You know?
Yeah.
So healingwithraymondandbilly.com is a little website I put up, and I've put all the links to the different episodes, but there's also, I think our emails or a contact form or something like that. So you can find us there. It's the best way to do it. I'm also at mountainzenshiatsu.com, and my email is mountainzenshiatsu@gmail.com. So if you are ever in Western North Carolina and want to book a session, I also teach workshops in Chicago at my school, Zen Shiatsu Chicago. So if you are in Chicago, be on the lookout for me there. I'm like there twice a year. So, and Billy James, where can you can be found on the interwebs?
info@janesacupuncture.com.
janesacupuncture.com.
Yes.
James as in Billy James. J-A-N-E-S. J. All right. Awesome. Well, we will see y'all next episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.